You're listening to the Restoration Church podcast. And due to the current COVID-19 pandemic, we're still unable to gather as a whole family for worship. But we're confident that as we are scattered, God is still building his church. So you can watch our videos of our Sunday gatherings on Facebook Live on Sunday mornings at 11 a.m. or go get home church resources and the videos at restorationlex.com/this week. Again, thanks so much for listening. So I want to start today by asking a really big question, and it's a question I want to unpack in our home churches and in conversations with our friends. Hold on to it as we move forward today. It's going to stick with us. Here's the big question. How's your heart? Now imagine we're sitting in a coffee shop. I'm sitting across the table from you drinking my Americano, and I say, hey, friend, seriously, how's your heart? Not how was it or how will it be when everything gets fixed, but in this moment, in this season, right now, where we are, like, how is your heart? I think that question really lies at the heart, no pun intended, of our sixth beatitude in our series, A Living Alternative. And if you've not been with us, the beatitudes are these eight blessings that Jesus gives in Matthew 5 that give us a picture of the kind of people who experience God's kingdom on earth as it is in heaven. And these blessings, we're finding they are counterintuitive. I mean, blessed are the poor in spirit, the mourner, the meek, those who hunger and thirst for righteousness, the merciful. These blessings don't really line up with the values we see in the world around us, and that continues to be true today. In Matthew chapter 5, verse 8, the blessing that Jesus is speaking over us today, listen to these words on the screen here. Blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. The Bible talks a lot about our hearts, and it's not just talking about our hearts in the sense of that muscle that's pumping blood everywhere. Our hearts are it's our will, it's our thoughts, it's our desires, our longings, our hopes, our motivations. Our heart really is the center of everything that we are. I love how Dallas Willard puts it. He says, our heart is our will or our spirit, the center of our being from which our life flows. It is what gives orientation to everything we do. A heart rightly directed, therefore, brings health and wholeness to the entire personality. In other words, it's our heart that's behind the steering wheel of our lives. It's giving us direction. Everything we say, everything we do, it comes out of our heart. It's why Proverbs 4:23 says, above all else, guard your heart, for everything flows from it. So if this is the case, what does it mean then to be pure in heart? Well, I think Jesus is the one to teach us this because he himself talks a lot about our hearts. I mean, right there in the Sermon on the Mount, he gets to issues of anger and lust and outward righteousness. And the fact that we can project to the world that we're fine, good, religious people, but on the inside, we can be broken to the core. All throughout the Gospels, Jesus is constantly confronting external religion that hides a mess on the inside that can only be healed by him. One such occasion of this is in Matthew chapter 15, the passage we're going to look at today. So let's start here in Matthew 15, verse 1. Look with me on the screen. It says, then some Pharisees and teachers of the law came to Jesus from Jerusalem and asked, why do your disciples break the tradition of the elders? They don't wash their hands before they eat. So jumping right in, the Pharisees, we've been with them a lot. They come up over and over again. They're strict religious reformers, and they hold people to this impossible standard. And in this such occasion, they're talking about hand washing, but not like 2020 Americans where we should wash our dang hands all the time. But this is a ceremonial act of purity. And in the Bible, it's only demanded of priests in the temple, but the Pharisees, with their traditions and their elders, say, hey, why don't everybody do it? Let's just make everybody wash their hands in this ceremonial way as well, adding on to the scriptures and making it hard for everyone. And not only that, there's a detail in here I hope you didn't miss. It says they came from Jerusalem. Matthew 14 says that Jesus was in a city by the Sea of Galilee. So these people came about 90 miles. 90 miles to confront Jesus about washing hands. That's the kind of people we are dealing with in this story. So let's look how Jesus responds to him. It says, Jesus replied, And why do you break the command of God for the sake of your tradition? For God said, honor your father and mother, and anyone who curses their father and mother is to be put to death. But you say that if anyone declares what might have been used to help their father and mother is devoted to God, they are not to honor their father and mother with it. Thus you nullify the word of God for the sake of your tradition, you hypocrites. As Isaiah was right when he prophesied about you, these people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. This is a fascinating part of this story. You see, Jesus is confronting the hypocrisy of their traditions. And the Pharisees, they have this tradition that if you have wealth or money or resources, that if you said, you kind of declared it to be devoted to God, then guess what? You didn't have to use it to help people in need like your own mom and dad and your neighbor. And so these folks were having their money and their resources and all this stuff, all this wealth that was coming to them and that should have been going to actually helping people, but because they devoted it to God, they didn't have to use it for anyone but themselves. It's first century prosperity gospel right here. And so these people are showing this external reality, and Jesus is confronting the fact that all they're really about is their image of presenting themselves as religious, successful, holy people. And Jesus says, you honor me with your lips. On the outside, you look devoted to God. You honor me with your lips, but this is sobering. Your hearts are far from me. Why is that sobering? It's sobering for you and me because it shows that on the outside, every appearance can look like we are devoted to God, but our hearts are anything but. Anything but. I've been doing this a long time, this ministry stuff, and I've learned there's so much that of the God stuff and the ministry and the religion and the activism, so much stuff we can do for God, but do it completely without Him. Stuff for Him, but He has actually nothing to do with it whatsoever. It's amazing. You know, it's easy in these passages to focus on, say, a hypothetical, high-profile preacher that you thought was holy and awesome, but then you find out, unfortunately, they were bad people. And you take a passage like this about hypocrisy, and you think, well, that's what Jesus is talking about. He's talking about those people, those external people that are putting on the show. And what that does is it prevents us from confronting the places of externalism in our own lives, of the ways that we might be faking it till we make it, the ways that we are going through the motions and projecting to the world an image that's not actually true within our hearts. You see, when we talk about being pure in heart, what we normally mean by that is that we are avoiding sin. And let me be upfront, it's not that, okay? It's not avoiding sin. Jesus, if you read the Sermon on the Mount and all throughout the Gospels, Jesus is serious about sin. But if the totality of your faith journey is just avoiding sin, it always devolves into some very, very dangerous patterns. First of all, if you're only focused on your own personal sin and how you're doing, you're going to be filled with one or two things. One, you're going to be incredibly prideful. You're going to be a jerk. Or you're going to be crushed because you cannot live up to the standard that you've created for yourself. I've known so many stories of people who only knew Christianity as this sin avoidance, grit your teeth, white knuckle, try harder life, and they have been crushed under the weight of that burden that they could not bear. On the other side of this is that if you see avoiding sin from the sense of, well, I might be a little sinful, but those people, you know, the other side, the folks that I don't like, at least I'm not as bad as them. Or, well, they did it, so this doesn't make my sin as bad in light of that. In other words, we take sin and our idea of sin and avoiding it really as a measurement of how well we're doing against and above other people. Both of these destructive patterns, both a sinful self-focus or a sinful focus on how well we're doing in regards to other people, they may come from a good heart, but in the end, both of all these things, this effort we're putting forth has nothing to do with God whatsoever. That's why Tim Keller says you can run from God either by breaking his rules or by keeping them. Which leads us then, it should, to taking an honest look at our own hearts. I can't speak for your journey. I can speak for mine and say that I know how incredibly easy it is to slip into a pattern of just going through the motions. Of just kind of this loveless ritual of faking it till I make it, just looking good enough to make it look like I'm that happy Christian person guy that I'm supposed to be. But what I've come to learn, and I'm trying to still learn, and what we all need to learn is that God's utterly uninterested in our pretending. I mean, the facade that we're projecting to ourselves, the facade that we're projecting to others, the facade we're projecting to Him is just completely uninteresting to God. See, the truth of the matter is, purity is less about our perfectionism and more about our pursuit. Let me tell you what I mean by that. It's about the trajectory of our hearts. It's about the gaze of our hearts, the gaze of our affections, and what we are focused on. The outward image of our devotion. Where is our heart actually aimed? And listen, if all of our interest and all of our attention is given to how well we're doing in regards to our sin, guess where our eyes are not? On God. And if our focus and attention is all on how we're doing in comparison to other people, guess where our attention is not going? It's not going to God. We can do both of these things, and yet the focus, the trajectory of our hearts can be going completely away from Jesus himself. Instead, what we need to see is the incredibly good news of the gospel. When we're talking about purity. And we see it really come to life in the second half of this beatitude. It says, blessed are the pure in heart, for they will see God. And in the scriptures, when we talk about seeing God, that's a dangerous thing. You see, Adam and Eve saw God. They walked with him in the garden. But after the fall, God in all of his holiness, all of his otherness, his unapproachable light, to see God was not good news. I mean, Moses, Exodus 33, he's on Mount Sinai. He says, Lord, show me your glory. And God says, I'll just show you my back, because as you see my back going away, that's the best you can do. Here's why he says this in Exodus 33. He says, you cannot see my face, for no one may see me and live. God dwells in unapproachable holiness. And if sinful human beings like you and me, if we saw him, guess what would happen? We would die. So people saw angels, they saw visions of God, but in the scriptures, no one saw God and lived. That is, until 2,000 years ago, ironically, in a little stable, a little podunk town called Bethlehem. That's when we first truly saw the face of God. Listen to the words of John 1 when he speaks about this reality. He says, no one has ever seen God, but the one and only Son, who is himself God and is in closest relationship with the Father, has made him known. Here's what's so astounding about Jesus. The God who was unapproachable in his holiness was approachable to the broken, the outcast. That's the irony we see in the Gospels. The people who saw God, who saw Jesus for who he was not the people who projected this outward sense of holiness. It was not the religious people of the day. For the most part, the people who saw God, who saw Jesus for who he was, were the outcast, the broken, the poor in spirit. And ironically, the ones who were most convinced that their lives were pleasing to God because of their record were the ones who did not see God even when he was standing right in front of their face. And this Jesus reveals perfectly the character and the purpose of God, and it culminates, the revelation of God culminates in this blood-stained cross on Golgotha, where all of our sin, all of our impurities, all of our brokenness was laid upon Jesus. And I love the beautiful promises it speaks this out in Hebrews 10, verse 14 says, by one sacrifice, speaking of Jesus's death, he has made perfect forever those who are being made holy. What does this mean? It means that God in Jesus Christ has declared you to be holy and pure. And not only has he declared you to be holy and pure, at the same time, it says, he is making you holy and pure. You have the righteousness, the purity, the wholeness of Jesus declared as your identity. And as you receive that identity, it is making you holy and pure in him. When we turn our gaze upon Jesus, when we turn our hearts towards him, we are made pure. The beatitude really works in reverse. Those who see God will be made pure in heart. What that means for us practically is that spiritual growth in our battles against sin, it has less to do with how hard we are trying and how we're gritting our teeth and white knuckling it. We're just got to get there. And it does has everything to do with resting in Jesus and his work and the righteousness that he has declared over you and receiving that identity. So I have a Scottish pastor. I love this quote from Robert Murray McShane. He says, for every look at yourself, take 10 looks at Christ. Why? Because we are purified by wonder, by worship, not willpower. When we turn our eyes upon Jesus, as the old hymn said, as we look full in his wonderful face, the things of earth will grow strangely dim in light of his glory and grace. How does Jesus bless the pure in heart? He blesses them by showing them who he is. And so our task, as Hebrews 12 tells us, lies in fixing our eyes on Jesus, the pioneer and perfecter of our faith. For the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. So now we're moving into a time we call witness, where we focus on not just the information we're talking about today, but how really we talk this out and we live this out together, how we practice the way of Jesus in the everyday stuff of our lives. And so I want to return to the question that we asked in the beginning, that I want to look at and process through as home churches and conversations with our friends, the question, how is your heart? Are you going through the motions? Have you been running away from God? Have you focused so much on your own self that you've realized that you're doing stuff for God, but you forgot to invite him within it? And so right now, as we move into our home church time, and talk this out, I just encourage you to be honest, to be vulnerable about where your heart really is. And as we talk this out, I know most of us are struggling in times like this. Use this moment to pray and to turn your eyes upon Jesus, not just as individuals, but as home churches. Say, Lord, we cry out to you. We need you. Help us to see you for who You really are, so you can change us, so you can purify us, so you can make us whole. You can find this question and more questions and resources, everything you need at restorationlex.com/this week. There's stuff for kids ministry. There is stuff for signing up for the newsletter. There is filling out Connect Card, and there is giving online, which, by the way, there's this week, even just from your giving, we provided food for kids at the Lyric Theater for an event they're doing online. There's backpacks still being given through Pampering Pathways. We're planning that right now. All your generosity is still making an impact. So thank you for being generous to our church. We love you guys. As we move into this time together, we encourage you to step into real church together, real family together, as you talk through these realities with your friends, with your home church right now. We love you guys, and we'll see you back in this space next week.